Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Mahomes, shotgun snap, drops back five, got the block. They come on the side, he winds up, he throws a long pass. Wide open Hill, catches the ball at the 22 in San Francisco. What a play by Mahomes!
NFL Live, weekdays at 7 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Presented by Easton Roofing and Miller Lite.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime!
Welcome into NFL Live, Kansas City, Kansas City, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Abriscoe, here with you for the next hour, talking about some Chiefs things, some NFL things, and really just anything having to do with professional football. One of my favorite things to get to talk about here with you. So we got that for an hour before we hand you over to some NBA bubble action here on Sports Radio 810. So good stuff all night long. Just heard from Lebo on some baseball. Now we're in football mode. Basketball is next here in an hour. But this show, NFL Live Kansas City, is brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer, brewed with great taste and only 96 calories. So this show is not only good for your intelligence, it's good for your health. Presented by Miller Lite, 96 calories, and the original light beer. We had a little bit. This is small Chiefs news, but this is a Chiefs show, and so we'll lead with it here. Just a little bit earlier this evening, late this afternoon, the Chiefs placed safety Juan Thornhill and offensive lineman Martinez Rankin on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, and they made some other roster moves, not quite as impactful. Officially earlier, signed Kelechi Osemele. They made a move in their punting competition, but the news today is that Rankin and, even more importantly, Thornhill start the offseason on the physically unable to perform list. Now, that sounds a little scary. You don't want to hear, you know, we've spent some time this offseason talking about how the Chiefs are rolling it back. Running it back. Rolling it back is a totally different thing. They're running it back. They're bringing back starters, and actually, one of the starters from the Super Bowl team is getting replaced by their regular season starter, Juan Thornhill. What is it going to take for him to ultimately get back into this roster as he recovers from his season-ending injury that he suffered the last week of the regular season? It's a tough timetable, and so the actual pacing there for Thornhill is going to be really fragile. It's going to be really interesting, and it's going to have to be monitored very carefully by Rick Burkholder and his staff for the Chiefs. But the PUP list can be a little bit confusing, and for the offseason, here's what I want to make as clear as possible before we get even deeper into the nitty-gritty of it. This is not a big deal, either for Thornhill or for Rankin. In fact, Matt Derrick, a frequent contributor to 810, in fact, we'll actually hear some clips from him a little bit later on today, he went on to say that Thornhill and Rankin starting on the PUP list was expected. I'm told the Chiefs plan to work Thornhill back in slowly while getting him acclimated. Both players are proceeding in their rehab on schedule. This is just a procedural thing that scoots some names around the roster and ultimately is the right track for both of these guys to be on. This does not mean that someone is behind their original pacing. This does not mean that Thornhill is not able to play for the first several weeks of the season. There is the reserve PUP list that if you go, starting with the regular season, and by the way, some of these lists are going to evolve a little bit this year because of COVID, but in a regular season, you can be on the PUP list throughout training camp and in the off season, really through training camp, you can be on the PUP list without any sort of timetable being enforced on you. If it's essentially for an injury previously that is keeping you out now, a football injury that is now keeping you out here. So it's, you know, that's Thornhill, that's Rankin, that's Alex Smith right now, you know, cleared to get back to football activities, but still not fully cleared. So right now, if tomorrow Juan Thornhill was actually 100% healthy, they could take him off the PUP list and move him to the active roster at any time, as long as it's before the regular season actually begins, even if it's just a practice. they can then move them to the list, and then you're good to go. If you are on the PUP list still whenever the season actually begins, if you finish the preseason, or in this case, just the off season, still on the PUP list, and again, the timeline of that will have to be adjusted with no preseason games this year, then you miss the first 6 weeks of the regular season. Now, there, I don't know if that's going to be terribly likely for one Thornhill. I think it actually might be. I'm telling you, this move is not something that should make you panic, but I don't know what the Chiefs' timeline is, and for an injury suffered as late in the season as it was, literally as late as possible from a regular season perspective, yeah, this is something to keep an eye on. The Chiefs also signed safety Tedrick Thompson, the former Seahawk, a couple of days ago. We talked about this a little bit. I believe it was the night that it happened when we were on Almost Entirely Sports. This is a move that you could see the Chiefs having made with a bit of hesitance about Thornhill. I told you I was wildly speculating at the time, but did think like this could just mean that he's not ready to go in training camp. And also, add more defensive back depth, add more defensive backs that Spagnuolo can work with for a little while. And I would assume that by the end of training camp, Spags is going to know if he thinks that Tedrick Thompson is going to be able to contribute in this defense. He's a single high kind of safety, a deep safety kind of guy, a roamer who had plenty of issues in Seattle, but I'm willing to hear him out while they try to work Thornhill back. But also, this news today reminded me of something we heard yesterday from Tyrann Mathieu. Mathieu was actually asked about Thornhill and what he was looking for, hoping for, and expecting in Thornhill's return to the field.
You know, my hope for Juan is that, you know, obviously he take it easy. You know, he don't put any, you know, extra stress on himself. You know, obviously, you know, he plays for a good football team, and I think we have the ability to play late into the season. I think him being a young guy, you know, I think the most important thing for him is his health, you know. So as long as he could kind of keep that in front of him, you know, being anxious to play, I think he'll make the right decisions. I feel like Rick and his staff they're pretty transparent. They're probably the best in the business when you talk about coming back from injuries and whatnot. So I know he'll be ready to roll, but obviously, you don't want him to feel like he has to put too much pressure on himself early on.
That is such great veteran player perspective from Tyrann Mathieu. Also, for this team, you know, Patrick Mahomes got hurt and he got rushed back. I'm not saying it was anything other than very careful, but like they were trying to get him back as quickly as possible. Juan Thornhill can wait a minute. They're going to be all right without him. They need to get him back healthy. They need him to be healthy for the long term, and they'll figure that out as they get closer to the start of the regular season. But I appreciated that perspective from Mathieu yesterday. More relevant today is Thornhill and Martinez Rankin both start the training camp season on the physically unable to perform list. Does not mean they'll be there whenever the year actually begins. We will take a break here on NFL Live KC, brought to you by Miller Lite. I'm Josh Arisco. More of the show next here on Sports Radio 810. Welcome back in the NFL Live KC here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Joshua Briscoe, and here in this segment, we'll take you around the league and grab you a couple pieces of audio I think are worth hearing. And we will start right now with Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. He said this yesterday, but it's even more relevant today. He talks about Antonio Brown here. Now we know he will miss the first 8 games of the 2020 season, but his agent, yes, said that he's looking forward to returning to the field in 2020. Yes, he tweeted about retiring like 4 minutes ago, but it's all relevant as everything's up in the air. I would not bet any money on what Antonio Brown will do by any means, but I will mention it here that it looks like the Ravens have some interest, and Lamar Jackson certainly does.
I just sure, you know, he's a great, like, well, around us, he was a great guy. You know, you don't really see anything going on at all. You know, he cool down to earth guy, you know, and he's passionate about the sport of football. Like, when he was working, you can tell, like, this man is, he gonna go, like, 24-7. And after the workout, he still went and lifted. Like, he already, prior to the workout, he lifted. We go out there and go to throwing routes. After that, them guys went and lifted some more. I'm like, dang, this guy, there's no quitting with him. So it's like, that's the type of guy we need in our locker room. And I feel like that we want to win. And I can tell in him, he want to win. He want to play ball.
So several of those estimations of Antonio Brown made me laugh a little bit, but most relevantly, I'll tell you this. I don't want Antonio Brown in Baltimore. I know the game is totally different now from the Chiefs' perspective. They have Patrick Mahomes. They have the distinct dude. But I don't want the Ravens to have another incredible weapon, which Antonio Brown is. Like, it's not even... He is one of the best receivers I've ever seen. Will he still be that excellent coming into this season? I would bet probably so, if he does play and does stay on the field and all that. I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. I wouldn't be excited about him coming to Kansas City, per se, but I would be unexcited about him going to Baltimore. Let's go ahead and squeeze in one more clip here, Rudy. The Ringer NFL show with Kevin Clark was interesting today. They talked to Peter King of NBC Sports. And there's a lot in here kind of looking at baseball's struggles with COVID and some insight from Peter King that I think is worth your time.
Well, I think two things. Number one, just the fact that there's not going to be much practice, really.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be, I mean, first of all, the entire, you know, the New Orleans Saints, they very well could be my pick to make the Super Bowl in the NFC. And when they gather this week, it's the first time anybody will have had any sort of football meeting, practice, preparation, anything since January. That is totally absurd compared to what a football team always is. The Saints would have gotten together starting around, I think, April 13th or 20th, and they would have gone through a normal off-season program. So, you know, that is going to be really unusual to see how teams adjust and adapt. And sort of as a part B to that, you know, I think it just means that normally in a given year, we always say that, hey, you know, because I think it's now been 20 years in a row that at least four new teams have made the playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. A front office guy told me a couple of weeks ago, he said, this is the kind of year where the Detroit Lions are going to be lifting the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year because maybe they were healthiest. And he said, I only use the Lions as an example. Could be anybody, could be the Browns. It could be, but there are going to be some teams. I will not be surprised, Kevin, if some team plays a 12-game season or a 14-game season. And that leads me to the second part of this that I think is really important about this year. Look, I love football. You love football. We love Sundays in the fall. I chuckle, get outraged when people say you don't want to see football. You want to see COVID take over and cancel the season. And I just say, what kind of nut are you? But the one thing about sort of the way this year is going to be, and look, I know that Roger Goodell is about as popular as spoiled milk to a lot of NFL fans, but I think this is the year that Roger Goodell needs to be given the power to do what's in the best interest of the game week by week by week. And if four offensive linemen, starting offensive linemen for the Minnesota Vikings test positive on Thursday 1 week, Roger Goodell should have the ability to say that their game against the Bears on Sunday is postponed. Mm-hmm. He just should. This is an absolutely abnormal year, as I've written. You're right. It's a wholly unfair year. But there needs to be some common sense, power given to the commissioner of the NFL to make sure that for this season, there are going to be some rules imposed that in a normal season would never be imposed.
I just think there are a lot of interesting things in there. I think the extra power to the commissioner makes a lot of sense. It's not something I would generally be in favor for, giving Roger Goodell more power over how the NFL season goes, but it matters here. That's important. You've got to figure out some way you can skip through a lot of the issues that this league is going to have. Beyond that, I do think that we are going to see teams essentially disqualify themselves. Maybe not literally, but essentially by having COVID outbreaks, and who's able to manage that the best is going to have a significant advantage in 2020. We will take a break here. It's NFL Live Kansas City, brought to you by Miller Lite, and we will take a break, come back with Seth Kaiser of the Chief of the North Newsletter and The Athletic. He took a look at Kelechi Osemele. We'll break it down with him whenever we come back. NFL Live Kansas City continues right here on Sports Radio 810. I'm your host for this evening, and I think generally speaking, your host on Friday is Joshua Briscoe. Also worth noting, no almost entirely sports tonight, as coming up after NFL Live KC wraps up, we see the Rockets and Mavs tip off as the NBA returns. That starts right after NFL Live KC, right at 8 o'clock here on Sports Radio 810. But we're still talking about the NFL, and right now still talking Chiefs here on 810. And right now we'll step back to a small snippet, like a quarter of the conversation we had with Seth Kizer of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports this week. Also the Chief of the North newsletter, very important. And that's actually where he did the work that you're going to hear us discussing right here, right now. LDT opts out, and within 24 hours, the Kansas City Chiefs sign Kelechi Osemele, former Raven, former Raider, former Jet last year, his best years coming in Oakland. But last year, he only played a few games. He had a shoulder injury that he wanted to get surgery on. The team didn't want him to get surgery. He got the surgery. Then they released him. A really bizarre situation coming out of New York, which I guess shouldn't really be all that surprising in the grand scheme of things, but still bizarre. And so I was extremely interested in what Seth was going to see whenever he went in and took a look at Kelechi Osemele's snap. So he went in and he charted Osemele's work just strictly from New York, where there was obviously a lot of injury questions kind of around it and everything. But he dug in there through the Chief of the North newsletter. The links are up in his Twitter account, at RealMNChiefsFam. He took a look at it all, and I asked him whenever we talked, hey, what did you see? You break down Kelechi Osemele, you chart his snaps, you give him his wins and his losses, and you see what in this newest member of the Chiefs' offensive line?
I see a veteran NFL player who has seen a lot of stuff in terms of how he responds to stunts, twists, blitzes, etc., who has a really great deal of functional strength, who's a different type of lineman than what you've generally seen Andy Reid go with at the guard position. He doesn't have as much lateral agility as you get with guys like LDT or Rankins or Wiley. Mm-hmm. And so he can climb to the next level fairly well, and he's got a lot of strength. Not perfect by any means. He sometimes goes for big hits instead of using proper technique, which is interesting because he is a veteran. But overall, he looked very solid while he was with the Jets. Not a superstar. Not like he used to be. Like in 16, 17, he was dominant. Mm-hmm. But he was still quite good. And so it'll be interesting to see how he plays. He's not that old by any stretch of the imagination for a lineman. And he still had some juice. He helped their run game. He did a pretty good job in pass protection. He's definitely the strongest guard that the Chiefs have had since, I don't even know, to be honest. Maybe since Jeff Allen was there, and I think functionally he's stronger than Allen. He's got longer arms. He's built a little differently. He's a big, strong dude. And one of the good things about his time with the Jets is the games that he did play in were the Bills, the Browns, and the Patriots, which means he went up against some really good defensive tackles with the Bills, and then he was matched up primarily against Sheldon Richardson with the Browns. Mm-hmm. And then I got a chance to see him playing against all sorts of weird looks when they played the Patriots, which just, man alive, Luke Falk, and oh man, it was bad. Like the quarterback play, I wanted to claw my eyes out. It was rough, but he acquitted himself very well in those tests. He had a loss percentage well under 10%, which is what I'm looking for. He had a higher win percentage than normal for a guard. Some of that was because it was a lot of man power blocking as opposed to zone blocking, like what the Chiefs use. But he looks useful. And if he plays at exactly the same level he did last year, and like you said, there's no way of knowing whether he was a little bit injured and all that, he would be an upgrade over the play the Chiefs had at guard virtually all last year.
Right, which would include Stefan Wisniewski, which would include LDT, which I think is interesting. And also, like, I think that totally tracks. I don't think that's like overly reactionary at all, but I do think it's good to kind of put that in that context. You mentioned just like the strength and also not the athleticism of a lot of these other guys. Is that just Is that just the Chiefs having like a clear number one guard on the board whenever they needed one, and just saying, you know what, he's not Andy Reid's prototypical favorite type of guy, and it's situational? Do you think that maybe Andy Reid's a little bit willing to put less emphasis on that now for some reason, or I don't know? Do you have a theory as to why we're kind of getting a different prototype of the position right now?
I would be willing to bet that it's just because he was the best available guard.
Yeah.
And because he's not a standstill guy.
Right.
It's not someone who can't move at all. So I don't think it completely ruined what they'd like to do. But I think it was just a matter of, man, we unexpectedly had LDT step down, which means we've got a vacancy at the line. They already had a question as to whether it was going to be Rankin or Wiley or maybe Lucas Niang at the other guard spot. Now you're almost in panic mode. If someone gets injured, so you need someone. And on the market is a guy who has been a very good to competent guard for years and years, kind of like Wisniewski being available last year. And so I think you just more go with it, even understanding, like Wisniewski last year, not as athletic as what Reed normally has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not as athletic as he was 3 or 4 years ago. But because he was so competent, it's just you want solid play at the position. So I don't think it's necessarily going to represent any sort of change in ideals. It's just a matter of he's the best guy available. One interesting thing, though, is Eric Fisher, while he's not like, you know, Tyron Smith, he's not incredibly powerful, he's a guy who's better suited for power blocking than some of the other guys on the Chiefs line. Him and Austin Elliott being next to each other might create some opportunities that they haven't had previously to utilize different schemes to just try to just maul guys forward a little bit when the opportunity to run presents itself.
Okay, so that's interesting. A couple quick things in there. There's a GIF of this in the story, and you mentioned it in there also. He can pull. He can move. You're right. He's not just a big pillar in the middle of the line, but still, I think noteworthy. But yeah, so you imagine, you said this in the story, but you're imagining that he is likely to end up at left guard, and they either move Wiley to the right side, or they just basically move the competition to the right side, and the first thing you would lock in at either guard position is similarly at left guard?
I think so, yes. He's played left guard the majority of his career, if not all of it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Wiley played get better at right guard than left guard.
Mm.
And it's not as easy as people think, switching back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Jeff Schwartz, who I rely on for a lot of offensive line takes, and he made it very clear this wasn't based on talking to his brother or anything like that. He thinks that Ossabelli is best suited for left guard as well, and I trust him in those types of things because, you know, he knows a lot more than I do about those types of things.
And you mentioned again briefly earlier that, you know, he can lunge a little bit and sometimes end up out of position or whatever.
Yep. Yep.
Whenever you look at the negatives, and you can expand on them at all if you want, but I'm sort of curious as to how positive the positives are and how negative the negatives are, if that makes sense, to kind of contextualize where this ultimately ends up and how excited you are about the good things, how worried you are about the not-so-good things.
I am more excited about the good things than I am worried about the bad things.
Yeah.
I do think he's going to have a few bad losses a game, which is not good, of course, because when he loses, it can be pretty quick, similar to a Cam Irving thing, except it just doesn't happen to him nearly as often, right?
Right.
So overall, I'm pretty excited. Even had LDT not stepped down for a year, or not opted out for a year, I would be excited about this signing because he played better. I think Wisniewski might have an argument, but I think he played better than anyone else besides Wisniewski on that interior line. And we saw the impact, however slight, but we saw the domino effect that Wisniewski's presence had on the line when he stepped in last year. And I know offensive guards shouldn't, you know, derail an elite quarterback, and it doesn't, you know, but it certainly helps.
Sure.
Even just a couple extra good snaps a game. And that's why, you know, we talk about, you know, loss percentage and speed of losses. A loss can ruin a play.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can decrease those by even one, you are giving yourself an entire extra play to work with. Well, with Pat Mahomes, having an entire extra play or two, I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen there, right?
Yeah.
That can change into 7 plays if you get a first down. That can change into a 60-yard touchdown. Like, there's all sorts of things that can happen when you give Mahomes the ball 1 or 2 extra times a game.
Yeah, and so, I mean, do you think it's fair to say then that you saw some volatility, I suppose, in his game. And again, also, if he ends up being fully healthy after only playing three games last year and then having this offseason, is there not an argument to be made that we might be seeing the best version of him that anyone's seen for at least a year?
There's an argument to be made that that'll happen. In terms of volatility, I definitely wanted to write it up in a way to really highlight that there are some negatives there, but they didn't show up much. His loss percentage was around 7% against mm-hmm. three really tough opponents. Yeah. That's a solid starting guard loss percentage. And so volatility is the wrong word. A few times when he lost quickly. And so that would separate him from elite players mm-hmm. who lose very rarely, and even when they lose, it's usually not a bad one. But volatility would probably be the wrong word, just because he was overall, he was good.
Yeah.
And so volatility is a tough thing to say there, but there's definitely a good chance that he could be more than good in Kansas City, because like you said, injuries are a bit of a wild card for him last year.
When I know that having like a single-digit loss percentage is something you'll generally take as a cutoff point, but if you are concerned about like big, quick losses, though,
right.
I mean, that it does feel like that ends up at least being, if volatility is too strong a word, it feels like at the very least that ends up being a dividing line between good and great. Is that more fair?
Yes, that's very fair.
Okay, I'll take it. I just needed to eventually get to a point where you just said, yes, Josh, good point, well said. I just needed one of those.
It was so well said.
Thank you. That's Seth Kizer of the Chief in the North newsletter and The Athletic here with us on Sports Radio 810. That was all I needed there was just that little bit of validation. We'll take a break here on NFL Live KC on Sports Radio 810. Whenever we come back, we'll hear from another friend of the show, somebody you may have missed earlier today on Sports Radio 810, taking a closer look at a few of the biggest stories surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs. That's next. Welcome back into NFL Live KC here on Sports Radio 810, presented by Miller Lite. Miller Lite's the original light beer, brewed with great taste and only 96 calories. Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest was on the Zone earlier today here on Sports Radio 810, and he is what you may have missed on today's action across the station. We talk a little bit about Damian Williams. That news happened, of course, and then there was a knee-jerk reaction from a certain subset of people that immediately called into question the reasoning behind it. We find out that it is too be with his mother, who was just recently diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and he told the story in a SiriusXM interview. It's up on the 810 Twitter account, retweeted if you would like to hear the story there in full. It's not a long story, but it is a short, sad one, and Matt talked about that a little bit on the Zone today, looking a little bit at Williams opting out and now also knowing the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, completely understandable. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think that, you know, players need to have a really strong reason to opt out this year. I mean, there's one reason that's strong enough. But as a fellow mama's boy myself, mm-hmm. You know, hey, single mom raising two kids, you know, Damian and his younger brother. I think she worked full time as a paralegal, you know, and still made sure to get them to the games. And I think she even moved the family when they were in high school. And I think even Damian took like a year off of sports because he just was only interested in athletics and not paying attention to the books. So, you know, hey, you've got a relationship like that. You've got to take care of the people in your life. And I had actually, I talked to Brett Veach earlier in the day, and he said that made that exact same point when I had asked him, you know, if there might be other Chiefs who opt out. And he says, yeah, I can't sit here and say no, because you know, we know these guys. I mean, we're close to them, but we don't know their family situations. We don't know, you know, if they've got kids who are at risk. We don't know if they've got parents that are close to them who are at risk.
Or maybe they're at risk.
Like, yeah, I mean, everybody's got, you know, whether it's personal matters or health matters, anything like that, they can have that, and you don't know. And there's many things we don't know about NFL players.
I just hope everyone appreciates that and will keep this in mind, because again, you know, there is some Facebook is a bad barometer for anything because it's terrible, but there was some like Facebook comments, you know, just straight up calling Damian Williams a word I couldn't say on the radio whenever the news came that he was opting out and he's choosing to be with his mother who has stage 4 cancer after he tells in the story that she was the person there for him. You heard Matt also provide a little more context there. More guys are going to opt out. I don't know if more Chiefs are going to opt out. I don't know. But when they do, just let them. This isn't anything. No one wants to do this. Like, LDT might have wanted to opt out in huge air quotes. It just insofar as wanting to help people, but he doesn't want to forego a very important year in his NFL career. This is going to be his last year with the Chiefs in all likelihood. You got to put good film on tape. You got to go get your next job in the NFL with a team that watched you play well in 2020. Maybe the Chiefs end up re-upping with you, but you got to prove that. You have a chance to repeat as a champion. All of that's true for Damian Williams, maybe even more so. The Chiefs drafted his replacement. This is going to be his last year in Kansas City. I'm thrilled that he got to win a championship and be excellent through the playoffs and all of that. But man, these are tough decisions, and they're not getting their contracts this year. They're getting kicked to next year. They're not being voided, but depending on the structure of those already, they're getting $100,000 as an advance on their contract, basically, as a loan. This is not a win-win for anybody. It's not like, oh, I'm going to opt out and keep getting paid. That's not how that's working here. They're not taking vacation days. They're saying, hey, I'm going to go ahead and push away from the sport that I love, the game that I love, the team that I love, the chance to repeat. I'm going to do that to help people or to be with my mother or whatever. I just hope that there is room for that sort of understanding in the way that we talk about these guys. So often they become football playing robots, and I get it, because I mean that's what we're all talking about them for. Like, we're not interested in them because of who they are as people. We're interested in them because of the sport, and then we can become interested in them as people. But I know how that works. I'm not telling you you've got to fundamentally change how sports happen, but once we are looking at personal decisions made by a person, you have to understand that that is a human being who has relatives who get sick, just like you do, just like we all do, and that have real concerns that money doesn't inherently solve. So something that I thought was worth at least spending a moment on, hoping to provide a little context there on Damian Williams. We will talk about stuff outside of the Chiefs and look a little more national whenever we come back here on NFL Live Kansas City on Sports Radio 810. Welcome back into the last segment of this edition of NFL Live KC here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Joshua Briscoe, been your host for this evening, and we're going to right now step away from the Chiefs a little bit, look around the rest of the NFL. One of my absolute favorite people to talk NFL with is Matt Verderam of Fansided. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. We had a chance to catch up with him a little bit earlier and talked about a variety of things, both, you know, on the Chiefs side and then also away from it. That's where we'll focus now. As we talk about the NFL salary cap, we talk about the NFL and COVID, we talk about the opt-outs going on around the league, but we started off by talking about the big trade of these last couple of days, last week or so, as Jamal Adams gets out of the Jets and heads to Seattle. Matt and I were talking about how the Jets have a lot of issues kind of built into their organization, but they got a heck of a haul for Jamal Adams.
Seattle gave up a ton.
Yeah.
And I understand why. Seattle's looking at this thing going, Russell Wilson's in his 30s. He's still in the young 30s, but he's in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to win a Super Bowl right now. The defense is a liability compared to our offense, which is weird. Seattle usually is kind of the other way. But now the defense needs help. Adams is a game-changing player defensively. So I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand why Seattle paid the premium. Also, Seattle hasn't had a good first-round pick pretty much since Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
So they might have just said, you know what? We don't do well with these things anyway. The heck with it. Now, the Jets got a lot of capital, but this is where I kind of diverge from Twitter, on the NFL Twitter, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody just automatically assumes they get these first-round picks. Like, well, those are two great picks. Okay, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to draft good players.
Yeah.
None of it means jack if you can't draft.
Yep.
I mean, and the Jets, you go look at the last 10 years of the Jets. They are tire fired. And by the way, the only good guy they've drafted in the last 10 years in the first round, Jamal Adams.
Yep.
So that's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but just keep in mind, every year, you know, look at the Jets a couple of years ago, Leonard Williams. They took Leonard Williams. They took Sam Darnold. Those two guys were considered, like, the best player in the draft. What's happened with them? Leonard Williams isn't even on the team anymore.
Yep.
And Sam Darnold, if he doesn't play well this year, is probably gone.
Yep.
So I think that's got a lot. Don't get me wrong, but now they're going to do something with it. Otherwise, it's just a nice value trade that ended up being nothing. And Seattle got a potential Hall of Fame player, and the Jets got two lottery tickets that they didn't cash in.
Yeah, this is very Jets specific now. But like, The one thing for me, and it, you know, it could be a simile, it can be the Jamal Adams thing, whatever. I don't know. Like we're seeing guys on publicly inquire about the price of real estate in Kansas City. I don't know. Okay. I don't know how the Jets can woo anybody other than just like, hey, we'll give you more money than another team. And if that's the case, fine. But like how can Adam Gase be there after this season? Like how can there be any belief whatsoever that can turn that around? Because it just seems like he is publicly loathed and has no defenders anywhere.
Players are not a huge fan of Adam Gase because he publicly throws guys under the bus.
Mm.
And when you do that in the NFL, unless you have a ton of clout, you're a dead man.
Yeah.
Guys will never play hard for you after that. And I think it's a big reason Jamal Adams wanted out. It's a big reason Le'Veon Bell is always kind of like
Le'Veon Bell
saying he doesn't really want it. He's not really thrilled about being there.
Yeah.
Look, a lot of this, too. Now Andy Reid is, you know, you mentioned guys talking about real estate. You can't see. Andy Reid is the ultimate player's coach in that. I mean, mm-hmm. He will never, ever publicly say a guy cost him the game in vain. Andy's always the first one to be out there and say, oh, you know, we didn't do a good enough job, give him the game plan, whatever.
Yep.
Guys appreciate that. And, you know, let's be real. Part of it also is the Chiefs are Super Bowl champions.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want to go there and play with Mahomes, especially if you're on offense? I mean, T.O.'s 49 years old, and he wants to go play there.
Yep.
But I think more specifically to the Jets, you know, when you look at that team, I'll tell you right now, I wrote this over at Fanside, my stack in the box, Tom, on Monday morning. This whole thing is setting up. If Darnold's not really good this year and the Jets struggle again, I think they're going to fire Gase. I think Joe Douglas is going to move off of Darnold because now they've got two first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the ammunition now. If they're fourth or fifth in the draft order,
yeah,
they want to move up with some team. Let's just say Cincinnati's terrible. Let's say Cincinnati is a number two pick in the draft. The Jets can go, hey, Cincy, you want Seattle's pick and our pick?
Yeah.
Because we're going to go up and get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or Trey Lance.
Yep.
And they've got all the ammunition in the world now to just go, yeah, Sam, listen, it's been real, but we didn't draft you, and we're going to move on from you.
Yeah.
I think that is a situation watch the Jets. If he is not really good this year, they're going to have every opportunity to move off, and I think they're going to do it.
Across the AFC, I mean, across the league, we've seen a good number of guys opt out, but there has been a concentrated number of them in New England. I don't know if you have any theory there at all or if it's purely a number cluster there. I've got a couple things I think do make sense, a couple things that I don't really think make sense. But what did you think, first of all, just specifically to New England?
Well, Bill Belichick has enough real estate in everybody's mind to own half the ocean at this point.
Yes.
But I don't buy – I know people want to connect dots, and I get – it is weird. I mean, there's six guys who opted out. But when you really break it down, I mean, Dante Hightower, I believe he has a son. His two-week-old son.
Yeah.
And Marcus Cannon had cancer.
Yeah.
So two of those guys, I don't think that comes as any shock.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to the other four off the top of my mind as to why they would have opted out. I'll be honest, I kind of was thinking that James Andrews or center might. He missed all of last year with blood clots.
I thought
he might be a guy who opted out. Maybe he still will. He hasn't so far. I think the deadline at the earliest is going to be August 5th. But I don't think there's anything to it. I mean, I think ultimately guys understand they have a finite time in the NFL. And yeah, I love these people on Twitter who are like, oh, he's still getting $150K. Yeah, because that's the same as $10 million.
Right.
Like that's like if I opted out of the rest of my year of my profession and they were like, hey, listen, Bertram, you don't have to show up to work. Here's a gift card to Starbucks.
Right.
And I was like, that seems fair enough.
And also, you have to give that gift card back. That's in advance. Like, that is coming out. It's a gift card coming out of your salary for next year.
I have actually seen a handful of dopes on Twitter say, well, you know, he's still getting $150,000, and if he's high risk, $350,000. Like, do you realize for these guys, like, that's like their tax that they pay on a game check?
Yeah.
Like, they're basically not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most guys are just, you know, it's a health thing. They're worried whether it's for themselves, whether it's for, you know, a newborn child, whether it's for their wife, an in-law who lives nearby. I mean, most of these guys are factoring that in. I don't think anybody's taking the decision of like, ah, I'll take a year off and not get paid.
Yeah.
Most people don't do that, especially when their career is like 5 years long.
100%. And I also don't buy at all the idea that like this is the Patriots sneakily tanking, because these aren't enough guys to help with tanking. And also, if Bill Belichick came to you and said, hey, would you take no money this year to not play and we're going to be really bad? I would say, no, thank you. I'll play and get paid, please. Thank you.
I mean, some of these theories that people come up with, they really should just be forced to delete their Twitter account. I mean, honest to God, just for the rest of society, do us all a favor. Could you imagine Belichick calling up Hightower?
Yes.
And listen, Dante, we know you're going to make $10 million this year.
Yeah.
But hear me out. What if we're garbage and you don't get paid? And then maybe you come back next year and we don't cut you?
Right.
And Dante Hightower's like, yeah, that seems like a good call. Let's do that, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
I think it's just an odd thing where, you know, that there's probably going to be a team that just, I think what was in baseball, like the Braves had a bunch of guys. Now Marquez just opted back in.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had like two or three guys who like instantaneously were out.
Yeah.
So it happens. I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised. And I think we're going to see some more. I don't think it's going to be rampant. I don't think we're going to see 100 guys opt out or anything. But you could see, you know, 3 dozen or something do it. And
yeah.
The only time I think it could be really interesting is if for whatever reason, like a legitimate starting quarterback opts out.
Yeah.
That would be quite a story. But other than that, like with teams, it's no different than if some guy gets hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference? I hate to say that, but in training camp, we all see it every year. A guy tears an ACL, guy pops an Achilles. That stuff happens all the time. So I don't see this as like somehow like derailing the season. Like it happens.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah. And if it ended up, if there was, you know, sometime between now and the deadline, like a huge outbreak or something, and then maybe a bunch of guys went like, oh, there's no way the NFL is going to do this safely, I'm out, then that would be something. But I don't think we're there yet. What do you think, as you've seen a little bit of like a look here and there, you know, locker rooms filled with plexiglass? And on Saturday, Rick Burkholder, the Chiefs head trainer, and now he's their main COVID guy also, I just thought he did a really excellent job for like 15 minutes just explaining what they were doing and his mindset and everything. It made me feel a little bit more optimistic, just at the very least that the Chiefs have their bleep together. But where do you think the NFL's kind of feeling right now in terms of maybe looking at baseball, no bubble, looking at the bubble leagues and trying to plan out their fall?
I think they've been, I know, they've been talking to all those leagues and trying to glean exactly how these leagues came up with these ideas and what has worked and what's been a struggle and what has gone pretty smoothly. And I think the NFL is going to continue to do this. I've seen, you know, and we all have, a lot of people feel, understandably so, that the NFL is going to have a hard time. They're not going to be able to get this off the ground.
Mm.
My answer to that is $15 billion.
Yeah.
Like, believe me, think about what you would do for $15 billion. Okay? In fact, better yet, think about what you wouldn't do for $15 billion, right? Like, you're probably in your head right now going, well, you know, 10 years of prison isn't that bad. It's $15 billion. If there's not one fan that rolls through a turnstile here in the NFL, they are slated to make $15 billion in revenue.
Yeah.
They are, I think, prepared to deal with this. And look, it's been COVID has been unpredictable for every walk of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think the NFL is going to have some one-size-fits-all that they never have to be flexible with. They never have to. There is going to be times like we've seen in baseball.
Yeah.
Every single player and coach has been fine in terms of negative tests, except for the Marlins, which is just a COVID hotbed.
Yep.
So you're probably going to have, I'm not saying a whole team, but you're going to have a situation that arises this year that the NFL is going to have some ingenuity. But it's $15 billion.
Mm-hmm. Like
they're not just going to go, oh, well, that's it then,
right,
and just throw their hands up.
Like right.
The NFL figured out, I think they've done a good job playing for this. I think it's been smart that they've done it team by team in a lot of ways, with some overall league oversight,
mm-hmm,
because not every building's the same. Not every city's the same.
Yeah.
So I think it's smart. And the one benefit the NFL has, 16 games.
Yep.
You're not trying to play 60 games.
Yep.
You're not trying to play 50 games, including the playoffs with the NBA and the NHL. Like, you're 16 games. And there's one game a week, and you've got big rosters where 10 guys get it. As bad as that is, you can still play the game.
Yes.
So I think the NFL is going to be okay. I really do.
And even this would be far from ideal, but if you know, if a whole team really is incapacitated, well, then you've got to then meet up again on the bye week. Both of you get a bye week when you weren't expecting it. Like, there is creativity there. We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to ask, in terms of revenue there, we've talked to you about the salary cap a million times. I think since we've talked to you last, it was announced that the minimum next year would be $175 million. You know, we talked about this months ago, that next year we thought it might go up by 40, and then all of this happens. Do you think that 175 is the most likely number? Do you think there's maybe a little pessimism there in setting the floor? What do you let's say that not a fan goes through the turnstile, but they do play a full season. Do you think that's the right starting point?
I think the number will be significantly higher.
Excellent. Good answer. That's what I was rooting for.
Because I think 175 is essentially if they don't play. I think 175 is like if everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
The NFLPA wants that number to be as close to a flat cap as possible. But here's the rub. So do the owners.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, the owners, the general manager, nobody wants to see a complete bloodbath next year when everybody. You know, if it's 175, you know the Eagles are like $80 million over the cap?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean,
they would be cutting fans at that point. Is it possible? Yes. But I think it will be much closer to the cap than it is now. Then I think the 175 was essentially, this is a great class in case of an absolute emergency number. And everything that we start, like if we start accruing games and accruing receipts and TV money and merchandising money, it's going to go up. I don't think we're going to be seeing 175 next year unless it is an absolute worst case scenario.
That's Matt Verderam of FanSided. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. Read all of his work on FanSided, the Stack in the Box column, the Stack in the Box podcast, all up there. And that's going to do it for us tonight here on NFL Live Kansas City on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Coming up next here tonight, the NBA is back. Houston Rockets, Dallas Mavericks, a wonderful matchup. It tips off next here on Sports Radio 810.